the Earth turns into a dandelion clock whose fragile seeds are blown away by a gust of wind. BBC Natural World. A misty lake where a family of ducks swim out silently across the water.
This is perhaps the best known bird call in Britain. A wandering voice, Wordsworth called it. The harbinger of spring, an icon of our countryside. Yet the owner of this call is a cheat, a thief, and a killer.
A grey-brown bird.
Few know what it looks like, and even fewer its unique behaviour.
Its tail feathers have white specks.
The cuckoo never builds a nest. Instead, it tricks other species into accepting its egg as one of their own.
A cuckoo swallows an egg whole.
It will steal and eat other birds' eggs. The newborn cuckoo's first instinct is to kill anything else in its nest.
The chick pushes other eggs out of the nest.
Finally, and perhaps most remarkably of all, the monstrous cuckoo chick manages to fool two tiny foster parents into feeding and caring for it for weeks. How does this rule breaker get away with it?
Cuckoo. Narrated by David Attenborough. Tufted reeds reflected in the water.
100 years of study are only now revealing the cuckoo's secrets.
Cambridge. A man on a bicycle.
Nick Davis is Professor of Behavioural Ecology at the University of Cambridge. He's one of the country's top scientists, and like many ornithologists before him, he is intrigued and puzzled by the cuckoo's extraordinary behaviour. Nick has spent the last 23 years studying the cuckoo and divides his time between college life in Cambridge and his study site.
A map showing Wicken Fen.
We're on Wicken Fen in Cambridgeshire, right in the heart of the Fenlands. And we're here because this is a fantastic place for studying cuckoos. And what makes it so good is that one of the cuckoo's favourite hosts, the reed warbler, nests right along this stretch here. And the reason the cuckoos love stretches like this is that adjoining the lode, this waterway here, are these tall trees from which the cuckoos can watch the hosts.
Mist hovers over the water.
It's late April, and the cuckoo's intended host or victim, the reed warbler, has made a long journey all the way from Africa.
The small bird shimmies up a reed.
The reed warbler is just one of 20 species in Europe that the cuckoo takes advantage of. In Britain, it has four other favourites: meadow pipits, robins, dunnocks, and pied wagtails. Individual female cuckoos specialise in exploiting just one particular species. Here, it's the reed warbler.
Nick watches the birds through his binoculars.
Nick has spotted the first reed warblers of the season. As soon as they arrive, they busily set up territories in reed beds along the lode, and each male proclaims his territory with a striking song. Once he's attracted a mate, she works hard building an intricate nest using the old reed heads and spider's webs.
A warbler balances on a reed.
But the small warbler's peaceful existence on the fen is about to end.
The larger cuckoo flies into view.
Cuckoo.
It lands on a spindly branch.
Cuckoos have arrived from Africa. They know exactly when to turn up, just as the warblers are building their nests. The males arrive first and sing to announce their arrival. Male cuckoos set up territories where there are lots of warbler nests. They dash around at high speed, chasing off rival males.
One cuckoo chases another from a tree.
This will continue for the 10 weeks they're in Britain.
One cuckoo attacks another perched in a tree.
Places rich with reed warblers, like Wicken Fen, have several male cuckoos in a small area.
Nick is making a cuckoo call.
I think it's not completely understood what the cuckoo's call is all about. It's certainly a territorial call and a keep out for rival males. So if another male comes, or I come along and mimic another male, very quickly the resident will approach and get cross. Here he comes.
As the male cuckoo takes flight towards them, Nick continues to call. The resident cuckoo lands on a high branch.
The male cuckoos may also be calling for females. Courtship is a rarely seen aerial display high above the fen.
Two cuckoos high in the sky.
The female doesn't call like a male bird, but makes a strange, seldom heard, bubbling cry. Several males often chase a lone female. It's only once mating has begun that the real cunning begins. By mid-May, the first reed warblers' nests have been completed and eggs are about to be laid. Unbeknownst to them, the female cuckoo, with her distinct reddish-brown breast, is secretly watching and waiting. Unlike the female reed warbler, she will never build a nest. She has plans for this warbler nest.
Well, the ancients knew all about cuckoos. They knew they were parasites, and they just couldn't work out why a bird would bother producing young and not look after them. Gilbert White puzzled about this, and he thought, well, maybe God had just done a bad job on cuckoos, and he called the cuckoo's lack of maternal care a monstrous outrage on maternal affection. These quaint ideas, of course, seem ridiculous now, but before Darwin came up with the idea of evolution, the cuckoo's habits really just were very odd. They made no sense at all.
Darwin correctly suggested that the cuckoo's strange instinct to lay eggs in another bird's nest evolved from ancestors that had built nests. By becoming parasitic, cuckoos were freed from nest building and parental duties, so they could lay many more eggs. So successful was this cheating that it was passed on through their young.
From a cuckoo in a tree to a majestic country house.
But how does the cuckoo deceive another species into raising its young? Early bird watchers were uncertain whether the cuckoo sneaked an egg or even a hatchling into the host nest. It's a question that has puzzled naturalists since Aristotle. Remarkably, no one knew for sure until as late as the 1920s.
A book called The Truth About the Cuckoo.
Back then, one Englishman discovered more about cuckoo behaviour than anyone before him, finally proving just how it manages to lay its egg in another bird's nest.
A photograph of a cuckoo with an egg in his mouth.
Edgar Chance was a businessman, but his passion was oology, egg collecting, which is illegal today. As a wealthy man, he spent much of his time travelling the country, finding eggs to add to his collection, and he would go to any lengths to get them. By 1915, his focus had changed from being a simple egg collector to becoming a brilliant naturalist, obsessed with trying to understand the mysterious habits of the cuckoo.
This is one I think of the greatest bits of birdwatching ever done, was by Edgar Chance, who's one of my great heroes. And in the 1920s, he did some brilliant observations on a common in Worcestershire in central England. And he was the one who, for the very first time, showed how the cuckoo lays her egg.
Pound green common. Men in 1920s costume.
Pound Green Common was close to Edgar Chance's home. It had a good population of cuckoos and one of their other favourite hosts, the meadow pipit. Chance paid local children to scour the area to find nests. He paid them well because nestling amongst the pipit eggs were highly prized cuckoo eggs.
The children find a nest.
There we go.
Thank you very much.
Off you go.
He carefully examined the cuckoo eggs and discovered that most shared the same colour and spots. He realised that they must have all been laid by the same cuckoo. Chance named her Cuckoo A and began following her. He found all the nests she was using and collected her eggs.
Chance watching Cuckoo A through his binoculars, then an eggshell.
The egg of any individual cuckoo is unique to her. It has an avian fingerprint on the surface of its shell.
Scrambling through undergrowth.
By identifying individual eggs, he was able to determine which nests she had visited and when. Almost everything Chance learnt about the cuckoo came from just studying her eggs. Many, said Chance, have remained unaware how much of the bird's life story is written upon the empty shells. Chance made meticulous notes on each and every cuckoo he observed, and in doing so, made some remarkable discoveries about their behaviour.
One of the things he learnt was the cuckoo lays every other day. He also learnt that the cuckoo lays her egg in the afternoon, and that was a big shock. Most birds lay their eggs early in the morning. And it really took many weeks of getting up at dawn and before to realise that the cuckoo must have laid the previous evening. And once he then knew the timing of the egg laying, then he could watch the cuckoo's behaviour in more detail. And he got so good at predicting which nest the cuckoo would choose next that he was able to set up a hide and for the very first time actually film the egg laying of the cuckoo.
This remarkable footage, shot for Edgar Chance in 1921 by cameraman Oliver Pike, is one of the earliest wildlife films ever made.
The hide is carried from the back of a car and placed in a field.
Once Chance had decided which pipit nest the cuckoo was going to target, he placed his hide and camera close by, hoping to solve the mystery of how the cuckoo deposits its egg. This is what he filmed. The female cuckoo glides in from a distant tree to a pipit nest she has been observing carefully for several days, concealed in a tuft of heather.
The cuckoo looks around.
Next, the cuckoo hops on the ground and lays its egg directly into the nest while the adult pipits try to attack her.
Chance leaps out of his hide.
Very determined, Edwardian naturalist had finally solved the age-old riddle. The cuckoo lays directly into the host nest.
A photograph of Chance on the common.
But though Edgar Chance had evidence of how the cuckoo lays her egg, the question of how it actually fools the host into accepting it wouldn't be solved for another 50 years.
A reed warbler in its nest.
The reason that I got interested in the cuckoo is that, of course, it's one of nature's most famous cheats. And in theory, this cheating should provoke an evolutionary arms race between the hosts and the cuckoo. Now, once hosts start evolving defences, that should then provoke improved trickery by the cuckoo. And that, in turn, would provoke even better host defences and so on. So the two sides in the arms race should improve their adaptations and counter-adaptations over evolutionary time. And I wanted to try and test by experiment whether this was going on. I mean, Edgar Chance had shown very beautifully what the cuckoo does. I wanted to try and understand why does the cuckoo behave in this particular way and have the hosts evolve counter tricks to try and defend themselves against the cuckoo.
The reed warbler's nest is snug between clumps of reeds.
Nick's approach isn't just to observe, but also to scientifically test the reasons for the cuckoo's cheating ways. The cuckoo is a threatened species. There are fewer than half the number of cuckoos in the UK today than there were in Chance's day. And it's detailed knowledge like Nick's that might help to save them.
Nick looks out across the river through his binoculars at a cuckoo.
On Wicken Fen, the cuckoos lay in reed warbler nests, so their eggs have to look exactly like the eggs of the reed warbler. They have to be the same colour, pattern and size.
The reed warbler leaves four eggs in her nest.
Nick can test how important the mimicry is by placing a wrongly coloured egg into the reed warbler's nest and seeing how the reed warbler reacts.
He drops a smaller reddish egg into the nest. The warbler hops along a bending reed.
The reed warbler returns and checks her nest. She settles down, seemingly unaware of the rogue egg, but then she senses something isn't quite right.
She stands up, then starts to attack the extra egg.
She starts to peck the egg.
She sits on the eggs, but continues to peck at the rogue one.
Each time she returns to the nest, she repeatedly targets the new egg until eventually she punctures it. Next, she drinks some of the contents until it's safe to move it without spilling something over the other eggs. To destroy an egg that might hatch out into your own chick would be a calamity. There is enough variation in their own eggs that they could make a mistake, but it's worth the risk. They have to ensure the survival of their own offspring.
If you give reed warblers a blue egg or a white egg or a brown egg, very different from their own green eggs, they throw them out. But if you give them a green egg matching their own eggs, in other words, mimicking what the cuckoo actually does, the reed warblers tend to accept that. If you give them a giant egg, the reed warblers find it very difficult to sit on and will often desert. So the cuckoo's egg not only has to match the reed warbler's eggs in colour, but it also has to match reasonably in size too, if the cuckoo's got to get its egg accepted. So those very simple experiments show that this egg mimicry by the cuckoo is a crucial part of their trickery.
The common cuckoo species is divided into several races, each with a distinctive egg that matches the colour of its particular host.
A tray of cuckoo egg exhibits.
Blue cuckoo eggs to copy redstart eggs, speckled green cuckoo eggs to copy warbler eggs, and so on. They are the only species that can do this, but each individual female cuckoo can only lay one egg type. So the reed warblers do have ways of protecting their nests wrong colour, size or shape, and the egg is out. Only if the cuckoo's egg is a good match will she outsmart her host. A well-matched egg, though, doesn't mean the cuckoo's work is done. She now has to decide exactly when to lay her egg. The reed warbler lays a single egg every day for 4 or 5 days. The female cuckoo must keep watch on the reed warblers to make sure she lays on the same days they do.
4 eggs in the reed warbler's nest.
The female cuckoo glides in.
She lands on the edge of the reed warbler's nest.
The egg laying is completed in seconds.
The cuckoo flew off with an egg in her mouth.
If the cuckoo leaves it too late and the warblers have laid all their eggs, then the cuckoo chick might not hatch out in time. But if the cuckoo lays too early, there's a problem there too.
If we put our model eggs in before the host have begun to lay, those model eggs always get thrown out. So very sensibly, the female reed warbler knows that if she hasn't started to lay eggs yet, that egg in the nest can't possibly be mine.
Nick's on a boat.
You get a completely different perspective down here at the water level. I'm normally up on the bank looking for reed warblers' nests, and down here you really enter the reed warblers' world, and you can see the habitat from their perspective. And every 20 metres or so, there's a new territory. I've just seen one of the birds hopping around in amongst the reeds there. They don't seem to mind us at all as we go, and all the while, cuckoos up in those trees behind, bird watching. I must imagine what it's like to be a reed warbler in the reeds, being observed up there.
A cuckoo is perched in a tree above.
The female cuckoo's job, although not as laborious, is every bit as time-consuming as that of the reed warblers. A cuckoo can lay 10 eggs or more in one season, but she only lays 1 egg per nest. This means she has to stake out dozens of reed warbler nests within her territory to ensure she can lay each precious egg in the best nest at the best time. She may wait days or weeks for the timing to be perfect.
The reed warbler settles down on her eggs.
When we ourselves have adopted the strategy of the cuckoo and have tried to do these model egg experiments, by the end of the day we convinced ourselves that it's actually a crazy thing to do. It's such hard work looking for host nests, and I think if I was a bird I'd just be an honest worker and raise my own young.
Just how many eggs a cuckoo can lay in any one season fascinated Edgar Chance, but not only for scientific reasons.
There's no doubt that one of his motivations for discovering the cuckoo's laying procedure was so that he could collect the most number of eggs that a cuckoo had laid in a season.
Chance was determined to beat a rival collector in Germany who claimed the world record for the number of eggs laid by a cuckoo in one season.
Nick watches a cuckoo take flight.
Edgar Chance did get his world record. He managed to get 25 eggs in one season from his beloved cuckoo A.
A glass-topped exhibition tray.
He collected every pipit and cuckoo egg that he could, and his vast collection is now held at the Natural History Museum at Tring. We now know that a typical cuckoo will lay about 10 eggs in any one season, but Chance intervened to make sure his female could lay more.
Actually, this world record was achieved with Edgar Chance's help. What Chance did is he used to farm the meadow pipit's nests, in the sense that if incubation was already underway and the cuckoo had missed that nest, Edgar Chance would collect all the eggs and that would force those pipits to start a replacement nest. And by farming nests in this way and making more new nests available for the cuckoo at a suitable stage, he managed to get the world record.
Egg collecting was key to many of Chance's discoveries about cuckoos. It wasn't illegal as it is now, but even back then, some naturalists disapproved.
A photograph of Chance smiling with his hands in his pockets.
Chance was actually drummed out of the British Ornithologists Union because of his egg collecting habits. So even back in the 1920s, many people regarded egg collecting as something which you simply shouldn't do.
There's a final twist in this amazing story. Chance's trick of removing eggs to encourage the host bird to lay another clutch is actually just what a female cuckoo would do.
The reed warbler hops out of her nest.
The cuckoo is the only British bird to do this. Her behaviour is unique.
The cuckoo glides into the nest.
This cuckoo will eat whole clutches of eggs. Just like Chance, she wants to encourage the reed warbler to lay more clutches.
Having gobbled up the eggs, the cuckoo takes flight.
Regardless of his methods, Chance's record stood, and no one thought that any single cuckoo would ever lay as many eggs in one season.
Oxford. A young woman cycles through the city.
65 years after Edgar Chance, another amateur ornithologist appeared on the scene, but he never took a single egg.
Photographs of nests.
I first became interested in cuckoos in June 1983. I was doing a water rail survey, and so to alleviate the boredom of sitting there, I watched some reed warblers. And when I found the nest, I was surprised to see a cuckoo egg in it. And I thought, well, this is far more interesting than watching water rails that aren't there, so I'll see if there's any more reed warblers in the area. And I found another three pairs, all of which contain cuckoo eggs of the same female. Now you might say I'd been bitten by the bug.
Mike Bayliss proved himself to be every bit as skillful as Edgar Chance, even though he had a full-time job and could only search for reed warbler nests in his time off.
Mike makes his way down a river in a small boat.
It wasn't as if I was really trying to break his record or even equal it. It was only when I passed the 20 mark that I realised it was attainable.
We did hear one singing across here, didn't we? Let's just cruise along here.
Mike observed reed warblers in the reed beds along the Thames. And like Chance, he got lucky. One female, he called Cuckoo X, returned to the same site year after year.
I'd say the best year was obviously when my Cuckoo X in 1988 achieved a world record under natural conditions when she laid 25 eggs. This had previously been done by Edgar Chance under experimental conditions in 1922.
Mike had shown just how productive one cuckoo could be under natural conditions. Cuckoo X returned to Oxford for eight seasons and laid a total of 113 eggs. Again, like Chance, Mike used his detailed knowledge to get amazing footage of a cuckoo laying her eggs.
Mike studies the Thames through his binoculars.
This is Cuckoo X laying her egg in a reed warbler's nest in 1989. First, the female cuckoo removes a warbler egg. Holding it carefully in her bill, she then slips forward to lay her own egg. Now. It only takes a few seconds.
She flies off with the egg in her mouth.
So, why does the cuckoo have to be so quick?
You can test this by experiment, and what we've done is we've put a stuffed cuckoo next to a reed warbler nest to simulate, if you like, a female who's very slow at laying.
Nick positions the fake cuckoo in among the reeds.
Not surprisingly, if the reed warblers see this cuckoo, they mob it like mad. They've got this harsh, scolding noise like this.
What is surprising, though, is that not all reed warblers react in the same way. Naive birds tend to treat a cuckoo like a dangerous bird of prey. It looks rather similar, and so they won't get too close.
A bird of prey in flight.
Experienced parent reed warblers will close right in. They know they aren't in any danger. This shows Nick that whilst reed warblers instinctively know to reject certain eggs, they actually have to learn to recognise the cuckoo.
The interesting result is that when you take the cuckoo away, the reed warblers seem much more alert to any change in their nest contents. And our experiments show that they now are very likely to reject even a good matching model egg from their nest.
The arms race is very much alive at this stage. The warblers can fight back and their defences can work. For the cuckoo's trickery to be successful, there is a lot she has to do.
A cuckoo lands on a nest and swallows a warbler egg.
She must first remove one or more warbler egg to make room for her egg.
She reaches in for another egg, then lays hers.
She has to lay a similar-looking egg, so it's not recognised and thrown out. And she has to do this quickly, so she doesn't alert the warblers. If the cuckoo gets all this right, the trap is set.
A spider web in a curled reed. Glowing in the sunlight.
Warblers who have been tricked can have no idea of what is to come. Those whose nests have remained safe from the cuckoo are ready for a brood of their own hungry chicks to emerge.
A cloud of flying insects.
The long days of summer with endless supplies of insects are bountiful for the warblers of Wicken Fen.
A mother feeds her hungry chicks in the nest.
In a good year, a pair of warblers can raise two broods each of up to four or five chicks.
Perched on the side of the nest, two warblers share the chick feeding duties.
Those that have been tricked by the cuckoo will have no time for a second brood. It takes as much effort to raise one cuckoo as 10 of their own chicks.
A chick in a nest raises its head, its mouth gaping open expectantly.
The cuckoo chick has just hatched, and now the reed warblers have lost everything. Their lives will be totally dominated by this imposter, and there is nothing they can do about it.
The cuckoo chick struggles to lift an egg out of the nest.
Just 24 hours old and still naked and blind, the cuckoo chick instinctively pushes out any other eggs in the nest. So why is it left to the newborn hatchling to take on this Herculean task?
You might think that one of the things the female cuckoo could do is simply remove all the host eggs and leave her egg instead. Well, the host will always desert a single egg, so she can't do that. And that explains very nicely why it's the young cuckoo that has to take on this task of rejecting the host eggs. Because although the hosts always desert a single egg, they never desert a single chick.
The cuckoo chick is astonishingly strong and has a distinctive hollow back that helps balance the host's egg or chick before throwing it out of the nest.
An egg floats between reeds on the water's surface.
Nothing the little ogre does alarms the foster parents, even when their own eggs are being forced out of the nest from right beneath them.
A warbler watches protectively over a cuckoo chick.
The simple fact is that a warbler nest won't be big enough to hold both reed warbler chicks and the growing cuckoo chick. The imposter will need all the food that its adopted parents can bring.
The warbler sits in its nest, sheltering the cuckoo chick beneath its body. Heavy grey clouds roll above countryside and water droplets gather on the edge of a leaf. A reed warbler flies from its nest, leaving behind two small chicks.
Sometimes the reed warbler's eggs are more advanced and both warbler and cuckoo chicks hatch together.
The two chicks lie huddled together, seemingly gaining comfort from each other's presence.
Again, it falls to the blind cuckoo chick to deal with the situation.
Lying beneath the warbler chick, the cuckoo chick suddenly stirs. It slowly begins to heave the warbler chick up the side of the nest. Slumped helplessly on the cuckoo chick's back, the warbler chick offers little resistance as it's pushed onto the rim of the nest before being dumped over the side. The cuckoo chick now turns its attention to a single unhatched egg lying in the bottom of the nest.
You might think the cuckoo's cruel, and of course in a way it is, but it's no more cruel than the reed warbler. If I was a fanatic of damselflies and dragonflies, I might get very upset when I see a reed warbler murder a damselfly and feed it to its chicks, just as I would when I see a cuckoo chick eject reed warbler eggs or reed warbler young. In nature, individuals are cruel. They're all out for what they can get, exploiting others as food or hosts or whatever.
Three gaping chicks' mouths.
Those reed warbler pairs who managed to escape the attention of the cuckoo or spotted the egg and ejected it are now busy looking after their own brood.
The three chicks take up all the room in the nest.
These reed warbler chicks are 9 days old and demand to be fed whenever there's daylight. In the nest nearby, the cuckoo chick is about 8 days old. Having cleared the nest of all competition, there's now just one hungry mouth devouring all the food the warblers can bring to the nest.
The cuckoo chick's dark white speckled plumage contrasts with its foster parent's brown and buff coloured body.
Just 2 days later, and the cuckoo chick has grown massively. It's about halfway through its time in the nest now and can barely still fit inside.
When I was a young student, I saw in the fens here, actually, a little reed warbler feeding an enormous cuckoo chick. And this just amazed me. I think this is one of the most astonishing things you can see in the whole of nature.
Its foster parents are lavishing as much care and attention upon it as they would for their own brood, instinctively caring for whatever hatches from an egg they assume is their own.
The foster parents struggle to quench the chick's seemingly insatiable appetite.
The cuckoo chick is well fed, and it's huge in comparison to reed warbler chicks of the same age. It's a very strange-looking youngster and bears no resemblance at all to a reed warbler chick. It has fooled a pair of adult warblers into working as hard as they possibly can 16 hours a day. An extraordinary feat of manipulation.
The huge chick shifts its body as it tries to make itself comfortable in the nest it has now outgrown. Rain falls on water lilies, a reed's leaf droops under the heavy shower, and a man's feet tread across a puddled pavement. In the reed warbler's nest, a foster parent sits protectively on its far larger adopted cuckoo chick.
Reed warblers are programmed to treat any chick in their nest as one of their own, but why do they feed it so well? It's a question that has puzzled bird watchers and academics since it was first observed.
Sitting at a desk, Nick fastidiously updates his meticulous records.
The cuckoo chick does have a problem, and the problem is how on earth does it stimulate the reed warblers to bring as much food as they would to a whole brood of their own hungry young?
Nick refers to a bookmarked page in a book.
Nick believes he's discovered the answer. It's a trick the cuckoo chick uses from the very moment it hatches to make sure it gets as much food as it needs.
If you listen to the cuckoo's begging call, it is absolutely remarkable. Most chicks, when they're hungry, just go cheep, cheep. But the cuckoo's got the most incredibly rapid call. It goes cheep, 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 very fast. And when it's a week of age, actually, it sounds like a whole brood of hungry reed warbler chicks. And by 2 or 3 weeks of age, it sounds like two broods of hungry reed warbler chicks. So we thought maybe it's this very rapid begging which simulates lots of hungry young, which spurs the reed warbler foster parents onto extra work.
Nick and his colleague Becky Kilner tested this idea with an ingenious experiment. First, they carefully borrowed a blackbird chick the same size as a cuckoo chick and temporarily swapped them around. So now a blackbird chick is in the nest that was occupied by a similar-sized cuckoo chick. Next to this nest, they placed a tiny loudspeaker connected to a tape player. They measured how much food the warblers brought to the blackbird chick on its own and compared this with how much food the warblers brought in when they played cuckoo chick begging calls through the speaker. Their results were astonishing.
I think the reed warblers are coming now. I can see the reeds moving.
OK, you take two.
Here we go, here we go. Right, blackbird begging now.
OK.
Still begging. OK, feeding now.
The size of the chick is not important. A big chick alone doesn't encourage the reed warbler parents to bring more food. A cuckoo's begging call is vital.
And now she's gone. Stop begging, yep.
Stop, OK.
Good.
The warblers will feed any chick in their nest, but only with the cuckoo's begging calls will they bring enough food to satisfy a chick this big. The female cuckoo uses the visual trickery to get her egg accepted, and the cuckoo chick uses vocal trickery to get enough food.
A cuckoo perches on the end of a branch.
It's now the beginning of July, just 10 weeks since the adult cuckoos arrived in Britain, and they're already leaving for home. With no more new reed warbler nests being built and no new opportunities for the cuckoo, they set off.
Nick mimics the call of a cuckoo by blowing into his cupped hands, and a cuckoo takes flight across a milky blue sky.
They have the shortest breeding season of any British migrant, and the birds can be back under African skies before the last of their offspring has even left the nest.
A tranquil riverbank. The cuckoo chick appears to be twice the size of the nest it's sitting on.
The giant cuckoo chick is 20 days old. The nest can hardly hold it any longer. Soon it will have to leave the nest, but still the reed warblers will continue to feed it for another 2 weeks until it becomes independent.
The warbler looks tiny against its plump adopted cuckoo chick.
This reed warbler's season has been wasted raising another species' offspring. In a way, it's surprising there are not more cheats to exploit honest workers. The big question is why?
There's only one parasitic bird in Britain, that's the cuckoo. In fact, only about 100 birds out of the 10,000 species in the world are professional cheats like the cuckoo. And I think the reason is simply that cheating seems a wonderful thing to do until those who are duped begin to fight back. And I think it's the fact that the hosts fight back which really limits the cuckoo's options and is the reason why cheating doesn't really prosper so well in the very long term.
The chick takes its first faltering flight from the nest.
It's hard to believe that in 3 to 4 weeks, this clumsy chick will begin its very first journey, a 3,000-mile flight to Africa. If it survives the long and testing flight, it will return to the fen next year, ready and able to trick the reed warblers yet again.
Nick's silhouetted figure walks across a pastoral landscape as the sun sets in an apricot sky.
I think people often like the idea of individuals who make a living in a rather unusual way, don't follow the crowd. I think they admire cuckoos because they wonder how on earth they can get away with it. They equate the cuckoo's behaviour with tremendous cunning and wit, if you like. There's an old saying, I think, by Edward Topsell, who says the grand creator has given the cuckoo extra wit to make up for the fact that it lacks maternal affection.
The cuckoo will need all the wit it can find, for its future is uncertain. Nick's research will be vital for saving it. For not only is the cuckoo in an arms race with all the host species, but the cuckoo has also had to cope with huge changes in our countryside. We should treasure the brief summer visit of the cuckoo and listen out for that delightful call. I, for one, hope that it continues to announce spring for years to come.